Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site.
Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
With guest co-hosts...
Beth Bryan.
Night Owl.
Call me, I don't care.
Okay, that's a very dangerous thing to say. Let's have fun.
Ooh, Imran can make a really nice game for you.
And we're joined with Dumbass.
Guest abuse, a new Polycast feature.
You mean new? This has been going on since the beginning of time.
Blatant guest abuse.
Brian Estrada, Beth Bryan, and here we have Daniel Quick.
Yes, you do.
Imran Siddiqui.
Hello.
Katamandua.
Hey.
Makalua and Night Owl.
Still asleep, thank you.
So,
the Civ 4 Quiz 1 started on January 4th of this year by the user Droopy Tofu.
I hate it when my tofu is droopy.
There are 14 rules to this game. I like point number 8. Preferably no net or book searches. Well, when you tell someone not to do something...
the likelihood is they're going to do it.
Early questions include, name the three leaders in Beyond the Sword whose traits give double production speed of their unique building.
Wow, it's like I'm in high school all over again.
Vedric, Shaka, can't remember that one.
I'm cheating, it's perfect.
Here's a math question. How much gold is needed to upgrade 5 archers, 3 to crossbows, and 2 longbows? That can make math more interesting.
Only for you, Dan.
565. And a little bit more advanced math, what is the largest percentage multiplier a city can have for a great people points with unrestricted leaders?
Is that a number?
Apparently it's 475. As of this recording, this is up to 50 pages with over 15,500 page views and nearing 1,000 replies.
I'm not going to be there.
Lab today, we discussed Wind and the Age of Sail, whether or not a rifled cannon would be a good choice to put in the game, and to increase the aerial capabilities in the game.
In Form Talk, we talked about them blue circles, not so shiny, and commonly used acronyms in the Civ community.
And in the Senate, we debated if there was any other use for explorers other than being your medics.
And in the mailbag, we talk to our good old friend, Sal Sirio. With an I, Dan. With an I.
That's Sirio. Come on into the research lab where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future.
Wind and the Age of Sail. John the Fool 2 basically said, you know, in Pirates or any of its incarnations, you have to pay special attention to the wind, and wondering whether it might be a good idea to set up Civ for taking a look at what the wind patterns are doing.
I have a really simple answer. No. If you remember how much of a pain sometimes to try and sail in, like, in Pirates, when you were going west across the Caribbean, it was easy because you had the wind behind you. But when you had to come back to the east side, it would take you 3 times as long. Do you really want a Civ game where this happens, where your sail units take, say, 3 turns to get from Europe to America and then take another 10 turns to get home? I suppose there's a strategic element in there, but that's, I think it falls into the category that might get a little tedious after a while.
I think you're right as far as when you're playing it in gameplay, although I think that we'd have a real debate from somebody who likes the realistic thing. They really freak out about that, don't you think? Do we have anybody like that on here? I don't know.
I just think it's unnecessarily tactical. I mean, you're talking about the scale of the game. It seems very tedious and highly unnecessary. Something that would be kind of cool, though, if it took into account something like a Gulfstream or something like that, and, like, map creation, that might be kind of neat. But it's, like, an actual, like, as far as moving the units, forget about it, that could be a real drag.
As in the thread at CFC, as Buffalo6542 pointed out, in Pirates, it seems to be too complex for the computer to actually take into account.
Well, but considering the fact that they can't automate their workers or do anything else, I don't see how the heck they're going to be able to figure out how to move ships on sail.
Or even if you could kludge it in, it wouldn't be as efficient as a human player, and the human would have yet another advantage.
I like what the DS says here. This makes me think of rows for ships. You know, envision each water tile having an arrow, and if you move along it, you only consume like half of a movement point. If you move against it, you consume an extra half, and moving across it, just like normal, is one. So like land units, you get a minimum of one move, and any fraction of a movement point is worth a move.
Mm. But the question is, you know, are you going to have arrows on water tiles? Because that's going to look kind of weird.
You could have it as an option so that it could display where the currents are. You know, like a toggle map, you can have the screen point out where you have the resources, and then once you know that, then you can toggle that off. So it's not always on screen, and you can always go back to it in case you forget. As far as having it on the screen in war, for instance, you're like, oh, I can't remember where those currents are, then you could toggle that on the screen, and you could be able to see that.
I could see Modcast wanting to talk about this and talking about making a mod like this.
Yeah, if you wanted to have an Aegis Sail mod and you wanted wind in it, that would be something. But for regular gameplay, oh, don't do that to me.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's probably not good for everybody.
Be interesting, but might be a bit too much micromanagement. You have to know the best way to travel, or if the computer could do it itself, then we just go, I want to move from A to B, and it'll be automatically tell you which is the fastest method. But if we're during a time of war, you want to use it to your advantage, and the computer wouldn't be the best method to help you take advantage of those faster routes to escape or to attack. Maybe a bit too much micromanagement during sea battles or whatever.
As far as moving units, I don't think it's that cool, but the one thing that might be neat is if you had an interface that you could bring up and it would show trade routes. They just show, like, your city's foreign trade routes and the way things are flowing. Maybe if you, like, settle the city nearby those routes, you get higher foreign trade income or you set up bottlenecks. That would then be pretty neat. Might work along this line. As far as tactically moving units, that's a drag.
Seems to add unneeded complexity. You don't want to make it too hard to wade into a game or something like that just because they have all this little tiny crap.
Yeah, it's all the little fiddly bits.
For lack of a better word.
This is why people don't play Civ in the first place sometimes. There's so much stuff. This is not helping.
Exactly.
I think that's why I hated Civ 3. Was it just seemed like there was too much micromanagement without enough, I don't know. When I was trying to learn, it was just a little overwhelming for me.
We don't seem to mind if modders want to make things needlessly complex. But, I mean, yeah, something as just for fun.
You just keep that out of our Civ cereal, dang it.
There you go. Or, I mean, the only way I can see this really working in a regular game is in type of a scenario situation. Age of Sail, and it deals with the wind currents, but that's it.
Yeah.
Are these, like, fixed, the currents? Because they'd probably be fixed because you're playing over thousands of years instead of constantly changing.
Yeah, maybe for realism, perhaps you could argue for some changes, but for gameplay, no, I'd say just leave it.
Well, with global warming, you could have the currents start changing randomly.
Yes, and we could have pollution tiles to clean up, too.
Or you could cause global warming purposely just to improve your routes one way or another. So this would probably only affect sail ships, wouldn't it? The more modern ships wouldn't affect as much, would it?
Yeah, I mean, the DS talks about self-power ships could also be affected by these currents, but less so, like 3/4 of a movement point, respectively. That does seem to be a bit...
What about submarines? Is it like the actual currents of the ocean, or is it the wind? Or a combination, maybe?
Yeah, there were some people that were getting into, well, what about not just the currents, but also the wind? Do you have a combination of wind and current, or do you treat it as a wind and current combined, or do you have it so that some turns the wind is working against the current, so then, in effect, that changes things, and I think it would be better just to combine the two. But overall, again, I like this idea, and I think it could be implemented like the DS was talking about.
Are you disagreeing with all of us?
I guess so. It's true that you would have to, in your head, unless you're going to be stopping a lot and checking the manual about, okay, what is it? This works like a road, so it consumes what kind of movement points again? But I think once you got used to that, if you play enough with the currents, then it would just be like the roads. It would be, oh yes, I know that I've got this unit and it's got one movement point, right? And it could move just one tile per turn, unless it was on a road, in which case it could move three. But I think as long as you could have that on the map, and then you could be able to toggle that on and off at your leisure, so that way you wouldn't have to memorize it, I think the argument about the micromanagement does come into effect insofar as if you were to tell a unit to go from point A to point B, you would want the pathing ability of the game on your behalf to follow the route of the currents, as such as you could use them. So I think as long as you were able to address that, and then you could toggle it on and off, and it worked such as the DS is described, like with the roads, so it's comparable to if you understand the road system, you get used to the road system, then that can apply to using currents with ships, rather than coming up with some totally different mechanism.
As an idea I had apparently back last August, I got tired of like marching armies of rifles and rebs and catapults along with it. And it just seemed to me it didn't make any sense that there wasn't a siege unit that came in with gunpowder. I mean, cannons came along before muskets. So just sort of threw it out there, this is something that should be changed. Possibly come along with two units, maybe like a early gunpowder siege unit that comes in with gunpowder, and maybe something similar to the present cannon, but maybe a little less strength. Then maybe with rifling, maybe a rifle cannon would come in, maybe a little bit more so.
I think it's an interesting idea, but I worry a little bit about if you put too much artillery in, does it obsolete too quickly? Do you not get your money's worth out of it? You know what I'm saying?
I can see that. But considering that, let's say the second rifled cannon piece, something similar to like a Civil War or a cannon or some such thing, you say you need rifling chemistry and steel for that to come in. I mean, that might push it off a bit. But yeah, I can see that. You end up being a little close on the tech tree.
But it is an interesting idea, and I think logically it would make sense for something to come in at that time.
Maybe if you shove the second unit further down the tech tree, past rifling, past steel. But it just doesn't seem to make any sense that you don't have a gunpowder siege unit coming in with gunpowder. I don't think the strength should be that much. I mean, the early cannons were really primarily good, basically just blowing down walls. There weren't really field artillery. Maybe not much more strength than a treb. But I think it just seems to be something there. It just seems to be one of the more glaring holes as far as the units go.
Back before Beyond the Sword, basically it was the Middle Ages. Then you had basically the musket, and then you jumped straight to the Renaissance. So once you introduced that other gunpowder unit, you kind of expect a group of units that came with the gunpowder age, and so just a straight jump from medieval to Renaissance, nothing in between. But even if you were to introduce a gunpowder siege unit in between trebs and cannons, you'd have to rearrange the tech tree so it wouldn't obsolete too quickly.
No, you're right. I don't know where it would come on the tech tree here. It just seems that definitely needs to be something in there.
Well, I don't know. I'd have to test it out in place. I was thinking maybe how cavalry have two tick requirements. Maybe the cannon should require a second tick with replaceable parts.
That's actually not a bad idea.
The siege unit will come in with gunpowder or chemistry, and then the cannon will be pushed back by a second tick requirement, like replaceable parts. And maybe if necessary, you may have to push the artillery tick further down if obsolescence is too early also.
Yeah, well, the thing is, replaceable parts is needed for rifles in the begin with, so I think you need replaceable parts before you even get to rifling. No, it's just maybe something like rifling, steel, chemistry, maybe like a 3-tech requirement.
I don't know, that might be over the top. There's no unit that requires 3-techs, is there?
No.
Aerial Wars. Solofin wants a more realistic air war, as it is now, it says, airplanes, fighters, bombers are a small fraction of what they should be, and he is disappointed. He wants more, like, squadrons of fighters and bombers taking entire fleets of ships through dive bombings and torpedo drops.
I think that's more of a mod, ain't it? Because you want to keep it relatively simple, kind of like a rock, paper, scissors kind of thing, because it's how Civ 4 is.
Yeah, but I do agree that there can be more done with aircraft. Because as of right now, I mean, they don't seem nearly as powerful. And there's been war in the last, 10 years in Kosovo where it was basically won through air power.
I'll never make it that far, my teams.
It's like, wait, there's airplanes?
Actually, I'm in the same boat. I usually have it won long before then myself. Or that I quit. But there should be more done with it, I agree, but I'm not sure how much you can do without turning it into, like, a tactical scale game. You know, you end up bogging it down. There's a little bit of discussion in here. I think someone brought up tabletop war games. You have an air phase separate from, like, the retro actual attack combat movement phase. And that just seems very unnecessarily complex for basically this game. Talking about the scale of this thing is huge. I'm not sure to what extent their power should be able to kill stuff. The end ships are, and they do massive damage, but I don't know if they're destroying entire fleets. You still have to go in and mop them up.
Maybe we're talking about a new game, Sid Meier's Red Baron.
Another one to throw out to the mods.
Phoenix says that, I believe that the mission system is most appropriate for planes, as the plane cannot actually move into a position and stay there. It has to perform a mission and return to its base. What has to be changed is their radius plus power and extend their mission list. Missions like Precise Strike, which could also extend to artillery, missile ships, and unit drop are needed, in my opinion. Of course, that power boost would come with a balanced anti-air boost. Yeah, I agree with that. It would be nice to see some more missions. Now, someone, actually the person who started this thread there, as Imran had said, talked about being able to do direct bombing run on enemy barracks, harbors, factories, on the other hand, because, of course, right now you can tell the unit to target buildings, but you can't tell it to target a specific building. Now, maybe as you go farther along the technology tree, perhaps, say, the stealth bomber and the stealth fighter would be able to have the equipment to be able to do that more realistically than, say, your first-generation fighter or bomber, or simply for the purposes of game balancing. People have already talked about making it too complex. Don't think making it as a standard type unit, as controlling water-based units or land units, is necessarily the way to go. Still have missions. Just expand on that.
About the missions, I think it should be a specific targeting on barracks or something. It should be more about getting spy points. You know, you should have the information to know where you're going to bomb a certain place from more spy spending.
Oh, sure.
Maybe technology, combination of both spy points and things. At a certain point, when you have more spy spending than your opponent, then you should be able to bomb those areas because you'll have more leverage over them in that area.
Yeah, someone can make the argument, well, you would need to have more spy points against a particular civilization. Like, even if another civilization had more spy points than you overall, but if you had more spy points against them than they had against you, then there would be a greater chance for you to succeed. Perhaps that is getting a little necessarily too complex, a little bit too micromanagey, but certainly I like the idea of tying that into espionage. However we want to measure that would have to be playtested for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it really has to be necessarily complex. I mean, if you already have, like, a line of sight into a city, it's a passive espionage effect, then you should know where the buildings were. I mean, you would have, like, a higher percentage of actually hitting what you're aiming at. And having it base bombers can't do it. It's an added mission for, like, stealth bombers to specifically target regular buildings and improvements. And maybe once you have satellites, you don't even need to have a line of sight for the city.
But couldn't they just build something to block those satellites? I was thinking something.
To extend that thinking, another option right now, in addition to telling your air units to target buildings, is to target units. Well, perhaps the stealth fighter and the stealth bomber, you could tell it to target a particular type of unit. Yeah, go after the armored units. Go after aircraft units. Go after the armored units. Go after your siege units.
Take out the anti-air, make everything else easy. Yeah, no, I can see that.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot SIF issues in the forums.
Those blue circles. Anomander ranking says, can they be disabled? I hate them. Mr. Ben says that the option that you need is no unit action recommendations. Really, I never bothered with that. I just ignore them. Or, as SIF Corp says, I use them as a guide to where not to settle.
Well, it's better than it used to be.
Well, I understand why they would want to sit on the coast, because back in the old vanilla SIF, they'd usually settle one tower away from the coast, and you'd have all these three useless towers on the coast, because it's not right next to the coast.
That drives me nuts. You go ahead, you conquer an AI, it's great, you're driving up the coast, you just get everything set like one, two tiles away, and you're running a trade route economy. But it's a drag.
He did that purposely to hurt your trade economy.
That's why I purposely hit the raise Z button. It fixes all those problems.
But what if it has all these wonders, you don't want to raise it.
Well, yes.
Sometimes, yes.
Mackie likes raising the cities, especially when they're holy.
Once. I did it once.
Oh, I like raising the roof.
Not the same kind of raising.
As has already been said, the blue circles have improved, But sometimes if it's like, oh, the blue circle agrees with me, that's nice. Oh, the blue circle doesn't agree with me. Well, whatever. I'm kind of indifferent.
Well, up here is blue circle.
Well, if you're a dot map person, then you probably won't use that at all. So it depends on the person. If you're a new player, then you probably say, oh, computer says it's good, so I should just settle there.
Well, the one thing about it is that people sometimes think is that somehow the AI knows where hidden resources are. So if you get a blue circle, it doesn't work out. Oh, it's doing that because there's iron or horses or something nearby, because the computer knows where it is.
Even if they don't have the technology.
I think it's been disproved that the AI has absolutely no idea where this stuff is. It just chooses bad city sites.
Just to screw with you. Oh, we can win easier.
There was a great thread a while ago where they went ahead and they set up a game where they went ahead and just did everything the AI told them to do. They did all the suggestions, settled on the blue circles, and did everything that way. It was very, very funny.
And what was the outcome of that?
Did they win?
You know, again, the first time I think it just turned into a disaster. I remember everyone just, it was like a secession game, and they were just screaming at each other, but the AI was so stupid.
Use acronyms in the Civ community.
DL.
Back on January 28th of 2006, so this thread even predates Polycast. Wow, it's old. CFC site administrator Thunderfall wrote, as you know, we have a Civ acronyms page that lists some of the commonly used acronyms in the Civ community. Feel free to suggest acronyms to add to the list. I looked at the page, which of course has been updated since he made that post.
Oh, wait, is there a top 10 coming?
Actually, no, there's not. I think one of the most commonly used ones is BFC, Big Fat Cross, a city's workable 21 tiles. On Polycast, whenever we're going to use an acronym, we try to remember to explain what the acronym is, but sometimes we do forget. We often talk about, or at least I do, GPT, gold per turn. And then, of course, there's some other people here that talk about, you know, like CPT, culture per turn. And I thought, yeah, that's true. You could use that acronym, but I really don't ever remember seeing CPT anywhere or ever using that myself. I don't know about other people. Or I don't talk about HPT, hammers per turn, either. You could use it, but I just don't think it's commonly used.
I don't think I've heard of that much.
I've seen it used in threads, but then again, I've never had a Civ conversation with anyone before in my life, so I've never heard any of this stuff used in conversation before.
Now you have.
Yeah, I have.
Was it an acronym for Great Profit? Because in the beginning, when I was relatively new to the game, I always thought GP was Great Profit, and then realized it was Great People. Was like, oh.
They use both of them, actually. Some people use it. You're going to have to read for context with that. It's like GA being used for Golden Age and Great Artists. You have to read for context.
Yes. OB for open borders. I talk about open borders, but I don't remember ever actually saying OB, hardly at all. SOD, Stack of Doom. Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
Favorite acronym ever.
BFC, GPT, SOD, and then UB and UU. Absolutely used a lot. Unique building and unique units, respectively. Civ specific.
See, I use SOWA. SOWA for Stack of Whoop Ass.
Nice.
There's a good one over here on January 28th of 2006. Tavernier had it. It's my ass, I atam. It says, man, I am screwed. Isabella and Tokugawa are my neighbors.
I played that game far too many times.
War weariness, WW. I have never referred to war weariness as WW.
I don't think I've ever heard that one either.
Yeah, since it's down for Wonder Woman.
Bushface says, CPU, combat probabilities unreliable. Yeah, that happens from time to time.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
There was any use? I guess they were only useful during, what's the map called?
Terra.
Yeah, I think that's the only time they're actually useful. Any other maps, not really, because you don't need to explore the world, because you explored most of the world already. Continents, you just buy the maps off the other AI, so, yeah, pretty much it.
Well, when you consider that explorers cost 40 hammers, they have 2 movement points, they can get the medic promotion, as argued by Commodore Nate. That could be a quick way to add a medic to a stack of yours.
I actually use them for that. I play huge marathons. I usually have a lot of unexplored space, and they're available to me usually early ADs, if not like the late BCs. So I have a lot of things to figure out also. And so take out barbs pretty well. They went ahead, they explore territory. They scout out the friendlies. And when you get open borders with, they're good for that. And I use them for medics later on, so I actually do build them.
And if it's later on in the game and you now have the ability to build explorers and there's still civilizations that you haven't met yet and you want to be able to map them out, well, explorers can ride on caravels. It can help you explore more quickly in that respect before you're able to build galleons and put other units on there to explore with. But I think the medic capability is really what saves its usefulness.
I think the only disadvantage about the medic capability is Woodsman 3. Some people prefer to promote Woodsman 3 and down the medic line so you get the extra heal boost. Because they can't promote Woodsman 3. If you want that extra heal boost, then you would want another unit that can go Woodsman 3 and the medic, if you can get a really high unit.
And I know we discussed before about scout units, and I think there was a consensus that Woodsman is definitely the promotion line that's useful for scouts. So there's another thing. Explorers, any use? Are we talking about new, fresh explorers, or are we talking about perhaps scouts that you could upgrade to explorers later on? I would think that if you've already got them promoted down their Woodsman line, that by that point, just go ahead and disable the scout, save some maintenance, and build an explorer fresh, and then you could get to the medic line more easily, I believe.
Well, maybe for, I don't know, a non-aggressive civilization, if you're an aggressive civilization, then you already got combat one with your melee and gunfighter unit, so you just promote straight to the medic down that way.
And as a recon unit, yes, it could have a combat promotion and a medic promotion.
Yes, it can.
I extended this topic a little bit because then I got curious about, yeah, what exactly is it in terms of promotions that recon units can get? And we haven't specifically talked about that before. We've talked about scouts, and now we're talking about explorers, and we've talked about the benefit of scouts having a woodsman promotion. We've talked about combat and obviously medic. Recon units can get the commando promotion, which allows them to use enemy roads and railroads.
I don't see how that's useful. Maybe as spies or something.
Guerrilla, which is a hills defense, and then farther down the line, a greater movement on hills, being map-dependent. You know, you do a little bit of exploring, perhaps, say, using, oh, is it Tectonics or Fractal that I just played where there was a ton of hills. Yeah, maybe that would be beneficial. I like this one, amongst others. Leadership, which can only come from a great general for plus 100% experience from combat.
That's a waste.
Yeah, pretty much.
Why would you do that? Because you can?
I doubt the explorer would survive after the barbarians, and you have to fight other AIs, because barbarians only give you experience for the first 10 XP.
True that.
They also get amphibious, which is a real waste as well.
Because they can't attack.
Exactly.
There is a morale that's plus 1 movement range, but that also requires a great general. Too bad. And tactics, which is a plus 30% withdrawal chance, but also requires a great general. Crap. And then it can also get the plus 1 visibility range from Sentry, but you have to get to Combat 3 first. Yeah.
Better off using a horse unit.
Yeah, when you got the barracks and the stable in there, and you can promote them twice right off the bat when they're built. Much easier to get to the...
Yeah, you usually have about one of them back in there. You should put one of them in, like, a horse stack.
Sit them on a hill.
Yeah.
Give them additional visibility, too, just by being on the hill. And there's a tie-in. When you're using your scouts and explorers, I'm sure you could set it on automate, but if you've got barbs on the map, or even animals early on in the game, you may not be paying attention to what's around you. But if you control it manually, you can force them to go onto hills, where possible. Yeah, it ends its turn, but gives you more visibility, gives you more bang for your buck.
You put it on automate, the AI is a really bad thing of running your scouts directly into bears. The scout decides he wants to go pet the bear, you know, feed the bear. Well, he does end up feeding the bear all the time. Early in the game, when you're not doing anything else but hitting, like, the enter button every turn, you know what? I'll manually control the scout. Eventually, they'll get eaten. The explorers, I'll pretty much always automate. But you can get away with it with the explorers just because they're strong enough to actually kill swordsmen. They kill barbed swords and stuff. They're actually good for that. They can actually just go ahead and just reveal the map. But scouts, forget about it. They're bear bait.
Single-player game, save every turn, so then if you move a unit, you realize it's going to be eaten. Oh, reload.
What'd I say?
That's a drag. And nothing would ever die.
Greetings from the mailbag, where we address listener questions and comments.
Had mail. We replied. Someone replied back.
What?
Yeah, in October of last year, Sal Cirio, otherwise known as Thorburn, back in October of last year, wrote us a very long email message where he talked about realism in Civ. And we responded in episode 55 and took about half the show. And he wrote back to us.
Good day, Polycasters. This is Sal, a.k.a. Thorburn, from episode number 55. I know it has been a long time since I wrote, and I want to thank you for not only responding to my email, but making almost a complete episode about it. Unfortunately, I've been very busy over the past couple of months between work and school, which is why this long overdue response has taken so long. Also, I enjoyed the fact that a fellow former sailor, CONMBC25, was part of the show. No, I wasn't a CB, I salute you. I was a radioman during my first tour and later an information technician during my second tour, where I got to serve on USS Enterprise. It is something that is always a part of you.
Sal has served aboard the USS Enterprise.
Cool.
What is Kirk like, anyway? I'd really like to know.
Sam.
Ba-dum-bum.
Star Trek nerd.
I would also like to thank Dan for making me a part of the Polycast tradition of mispronouncing names, particularly my last name, which is Cirio. As my grandfather used to say, it is like Sirius but leave us off. It makes me feel honored.
I went back and listened to episode 55, and I can't believe it, but I didn't include the I in my pronunciation, so I said Ciro. Wow. I didn't believe it was that bad, but it's true. So if I've been paying closer attention, I would have said it almost correctly. I would have said Cirio, but it's actually Cirio. That would have been closer, but Ciro. Wow. Sorry about that, although in effect, you're actually happy about that, so you're welcome. I did it on purpose.
Pathetic.
I also felt that your responses were well put and did a lot to settle my frustrations on this particular issue. I certainly agree that the game does not have to give advantage toward the player and, in fact, when it does, should have counters which can hurt the player. In response to Dan's point about the developers and publishers needing to take into account the mass appeal, that is where I like options. In Civ 3, the ability to have cultural starts was an option. However, it was removed altogether from Civ 4. It was something that could be toggled in accordance to the player's preference. I know that this was one point that drove me to write my original letter.
Yes, part of my response to the return of availability of cultural link starts was on the point of targeting mass appeal by Abraxas Games, the developer, and Take-Two Interactive, the publisher of the Civ series. But I prefaced that with gameplay balancing, and perhaps I should have underlined it a bit more. Honestly, I'm not aware to what extent, if any, Firaxis and Take-Two made an attempting to implement culturally linked starts in Civ 4. But if they did, I'm going to presume that a primary reason that it did not make the final cut was because of gameplay balance issues, whatever those issues happen to be. Whether a component is for realism, gameplay, or even just flavor, balance is paramount to equitable gameplay for both human players and the AI. And I think it would be interesting to learn what official efforts, if any, were made towards implementing cultural link starts as a gameplay option. Perhaps that is something that the modding community could help with.
I just think Firaxis just forgot. It wasn't that important. You know, some people might prefer it. Some people just don't really care. Mostly about the gameplay, as long as it's fun. If you really wanted the cultural starts, then the mod would be there sufficient, I guess.
Well, what you could do is you could just go into custom game, and if you wanted to be like Egypt and be surrounded by like something similar, right, you can go ahead and put those AIs in next to you. You could go do that yourself. It just looks more like looking at his letter. He wants to replay history and wants something more structured.
You should buy Europa Universalis then.
Yeah.
I reread parts of his original letter, and he had said that right now what I have to do is I have to go into World Builder once I start a game, he says, which of course spoils a lot of things in that respect, and then I have to find out what the AIs are. And of course, you could always specify who they are in the game setup and then move them around in World Builder, and he says it just is so time-consuming before I actually get to start to play the game.
What kind of map does he play? Does he play Europe or like the actual Earth map or something? Because if he did, then he wouldn't have to worry about that, because he would know where they live.
Get into that. He didn't mention it, and I'm pretty sure we didn't touch upon that in episode 55 when we responded to his original letter.
In my argument about the cultural starts, I called the random starts as it is now fantasy starts. To that, the response was that fantasy is about dragons and wizards and giant death robots. Yes, Those are often referred to as fantasy, at least until somebody actually creates a giant death robot. But fantasy, as a term, is the opposite of reality, and that is the context that I was using the word. China starting off next to Roman America is not realistic and therefore would be labeled as fantasy.
Now, part of our response was that to us, fantasy is about dragons and wizards. And when I think about fantasy and games, those are the type of games that immediately come to play. So in the context of games in particular, when I hear the word fantasy, that's what I'm thinking about. Now, I did also mention the giant death robots as far as fantasy goes. Originally,
because they're kind of cool.
I was stretching things a bit there. More sci-fi to me, and specifically fantasy. We did not say that that was an absolute definition of the term, and you certainly made it clear in your letter the context in which you were using that word. Strictly speaking, fantasy is, as you say, the opposite of reality.
But then all of Civ is fantasy.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, who lives for, you know, thousands of years?
Well, as I said, strictly speaking.
Also, I never said that religion and culture starts had to be a default option. Just an option.
That was my bad. I acknowledge that in part of my response to your original letter, Sal, I indicated that you had written you wanted culture link starts to be a default option, and that was correct. You made it clear that you just wanted it as an option, period.
And as far as wanting to replay history over and over again, that is not necessarily what I want. What I would like is to be able to replay history, or at least something relatively close, as it happened if I make the decisions that coincide with history. However, I can deviate from the historical path depending on what decisions I make. To me, that is truly the what-if aspect. What if America lost the revolution? What if Rome did not fall? For that matter, what if Rome did not convert to Christianity? What if China did not build the Great Wall? Or Egyptians, the pyramids? It is finding the alternate paths to history that excites me, not necessarily the exact replay of history. And while I can only truly speak for myself, I think that is the key to those who want more realistic options.
I think this elaboration, Sal, on what you regard of what-if situations, I think that coincides with most, if not everybody, on the panel here. I think that that certainly has an element of excitement to place oneself in a situation that a leader of the past was in and purposely choose a different path. Because we have the advantage of knowing, of course, what was done historically and what resulted from that. And short of possibly a real time machine, we cannot experience this exactly, as we may not have all of the details accurate, we may not have all the details known, or be able to be reflected in the game in a simulated environment. His elaboration on there really was not what he was saying in the original email, or at least when he was talking about replaying history, that he didn't mention this kind of what-if situation at all. I think that was our response, in part, was, well, use historical situations, but have a what-if. Okay, you are Napoleon at the Battle of Waterloo. What are you going to do differently?
Could you play those mods? That's what the mods are for, aren't they?
That's what Avalon Hill games are for.
Like, if you want something really close.
Yes, if he wants a what-if, he probably doesn't want EU. I take that back.
Anyway, the rest of your arguments I can understand, or at least live with. Thanks again for sharing my letter to begin with and responding in such a mature manner. You certainly did make many great points, some which coincided with my own, and some which countered my own.
So you're welcome, and thank you again for your detailed and thoughtful letter that you sent in originally, as well as your response. We were wondering what had happened. We wondered if you weren't listening to the show anymore because you're like,
I'm pissed.
That all said, I look forward to catching up with you all in August when you come down to my neck of the woods. I definitely plan to attend CivCon.
Oh, hey, all right.
That makes one of us. Oh, wait.
With that in mind, I did notice that you mentioned a tour for the out-of-towners visiting the Baltimore area. I should recommend a few places to visit. First, the Inner Harbor would be a great stop. Also, no civer can visit Baltimore without a stop at Fort M.C. Henry. If you like baseball, don't forget to visit the Babe Ruth Museum, and the Crow House is also a great place to see. Those are just a few suggestions. Anyway, have a great conquest. South Thyburn Stereo.
Intro plus Queen equals excellent. Seven Spirits said that he recently heard the song Innuendo by Queen, which aside from being a totally awesome song in its own right, fits remarkably well with the themes of civilization. It also lines up beautifully with the Civ 4 intro video. I actually hadn't heard that Queen song before, but I had seen the intro video before, and sure enough, that really did fit very well. The sun lined up at the beginning, and then the waves meeting the land part, where you had a shot of the sea and the land. Seven Spirits said, "The tread that fine line," quote-unquote, "was punctuated by the camera flying past one of the lions holding up the sails." The switching of the coronation scene happened exactly at the same moment at the end of the first part of the song, and the race, color, or creed line coincided with the camera panning over differently colored statues. And finally, the video ends right when the music gets to its first interruptible point. Ah, coincidence.
It actually looked really cool. But I do think, and I actually did post this on this thread, it was, I think a better Queen song for a Civ would be I Want It All.
But would it fit well with the intro, is the question.
It does not. After Shafter actually says, this reminds me a lot when they chose Faith for the introduction of the last Star Trek series, Enterprise. In this case, it's way too heavy and isn't even close to fitting with the generally classical or ethnically driven music that is the trademark of Civ soundtrack. But I don't think he was suggesting that, for instance, Baba Yetu be replaced with this song. I think it makes a neat music video.
Mm-hmm. You just have that mode of, hey, this works together. Wow.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
That's 44-121-288-POLLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast.
Or email us at polycast@apolson.net.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.apolton.net. Here are the questions from Natasha O'Donnell, the charter member of the Best Brian Fan Club.
Hello, Brian. What do you think about having both Ivory and Spices in a BFC? Is it good enough that it makes the elephants taste better, or should the ivory tile generate an extra food because of it?
Sweet.
Elephants are used to make meals out of people, right?
Second, one of our members has taken your advice on using nationhood for the draft, but every time he drafts units, his population flees to the neighbor's territory. How would you suggest he counter this?
Locator in your drafting city. And counters all the unhappiness.
Finally, boxers or briefs?
Right now it's pajamas, but you know, normally it's boxers.
You'd really freak her out and you could say, neither.
Commando.
Thank you for listening to Polycast episode 63. This is Night Owl signing off. Daniel Quick.
Bye all.
Imran.
Bye.
Makalua.
Bye.
Katamandua.
Bye everyone.
And finally, Brian.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We gotta ask our guest
the standard question.
Yeah.
Will you be paying by credit card or money order?
No.
Brian, if you were invited to come back on the show again, would you?
Oh, yeah, of course. I didn't invite a set-up for nothing. I through all this trouble hooking up my computer, getting a headset, I better be back.
He's not just saying I will. He's issuing you a threat. You better, damn it.
I'm a New Yorker. This is how we talk.
Talking about again?
We're not popping down. The show is done. We've answered all of our questions. We belittled you enough for one day.
Alright.
For one day.
But come back tomorrow.
With a whole fresh batch of belittling.
February 21st, 2009.
Civilization 4, Warlords, and Beyond the Sword Sound Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive.
innuendo clip by Queen Copyright Parlophone. Email ratings courtesy SpokenText.net.
Copyright 2009. Wolfen Civilization site at Apolfen.net.